Welcome back. This is Real Life Real Talk. Actually, happy Saturday morning. Welcome back. You haven't even heard me yet. So happy Saturday. This is Real Life Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Kuchenberger. We're glad you're here on this Saturday morning. Good morning, Beth.
Good morning, Robert. Does anybody call you Robert?
No, not often. Sometimes people do. So, you know, it's not odd, but that's about it.
All day today on the show. It's great. Good morning, Robert.
Ken, the producer, just whispered into my ear, the tax man calls you Robert, which is absolutely true, and he's getting ready to call me Robert as he looks through whatever forms I sent him. So, yes, there is at least one other person who calls me Robert. It is tax season. So, anyway, how you doing? How's things in Monterey these days?
Oh, you know what? It's sunshiny. The pools are open.
Oh, geez. I forgot I shouldn't be asking these questions in spring and winter time.
I mean, it is. The airports are busy because people come our direction for spring break, and this is spring break season. So
I
went to speak at a conference, and normally at the Houston airport, the international lobby, you know, it's like a 15-minute wait in line. I was in there like an hour with everybody with their flip-flops and sunscreen. And this is just like, this makes me feel old to say this, but I'm just going to anyway, but social commentary. Hordes of college students, and maybe even, hopefully not, a couple high school students, on international trips together as couples. And I just think, what do you have to look forward to in your honeymoon if you're already, like, jetting off to wherever with your boyfriend in college? Like, just saying.
I'm with you on that.
I almost engaged them all in conversation because I felt like I was surrounded by college couples, and I just wanted to say, oh, you all, there is just, you know, you're getting the cart before the horse. Like, why would you do that? But
yeah, you know, it's the interesting thing. We weren't planning on talking about this during this little segment, but you brought it up. It's as if they want the romance before the relationship, instead of romance growing out of the relationship.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's like, hey, we've known each other for 6 months or a year or something like that, and
less.
Or less. And so I got an idea. Let's pretend that we've got this great relationship that we can now go build romance into. Yeah. It is the cart before the horse, but you know. Hey. I guess they can do it that way. Hey, we got exciting news. We announced last week, right? We got exciting news.
And we're not having a baby.
No.
Not that kind of exciting news.
No, you're not having a baby. Christine's not having a baby. No babies.
Yeah.
Right?
That's what you think of when someone says, I have exciting news.
No.
It's like,
no.
Who's having
but we are birthing. We are birthing something. How's that? How's that for a transition? Yeah. We got a new time.
We've
got a new time coming up and a whole bunch of new stuff. It's sort of like a relaunch of the show happening in just a couple of weeks.
Yes, we do. At 10 o'clock on the Eastern Time, 7 o'clock on the West Coast, we are excited about being able to reach more of you during the daytime hours. I know that we've been getting lots of downloads on iTunes and off the website. Folks on the West Coast taking advantage of listening to it at their leisure, which we encourage you to do, but it'll be fun to be live at an hour where more people will be able to hear what we're up to and what we're talking
about. That's right. As a result of popular pressure, right? Some people are like, hey, you guys need to be on at a better time for me.
Mm-hmm.
And 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific is a much better time for me, so get it together. Okay. So we've been working behind the scenes to try to make that happen so that, I guess, people like the show and they want, you know, to be able to hear it at a more convenient time and have their friends listen to it at a more convenient time. So we are happy to oblige.
Yes, I think so, too. I'm excited about this, again, about being able to have the conversation at a wider level and catching all those Californians. You know, they set kind of a high bar, so we better be on our game when that starts on April 6th.
That's exactly right. And what's going to happen then, we're also going to have a little bit of a tweak to the name of the show. We're going to add a website, Real Life with Beth and Rob, and the website, obviously, reallifewithbethandrob.com. And so before, we'd be talking about, hey, this article and that article or, you know, this person or that. Now we can just link all together right there on the website. We've talked about having sort of the fifth segment where we can blog some things, people can interact. So it's going to be a much more interactive experience as well, and we're looking forward to it. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I like our new tagline will be Conversation to Inspire Your Day. And I was thinking about maybe 5 years ago or so, I bought this little product called Table Topics. They sell them all over the place, I'm sure.
We have those at home, too.
Yeah. I have them on my table, and because we just have a horde of guests that visit us here in Mexico, it's kind of fun to have it on the table and, you know, just my kids know now how to pick up the box and ask people questions. And I think we just will have to continue on the website the conversations that we start on the air and think of things that folks can take the message of whatever it is we were talking about that day and then use it as a launching pad in their conversations with their family or friends or at work or wherever they are.
And adding to that is going to be what I think is kind of a unique, interesting show today. Jolene Fincher and Bo Stern, both women authors, are going to be on Ruby Slippers is the book we'll talk about in the first segment, Jolene Fincher's book, and Bo Stern, Beautiful Battlefields. These are both women who are kind of discovering and want to share their discovery of what it means to be a woman of God, what God says about that. And, you know, it's not really a topic that we have jumped in on a lot, but we talk a lot about, just you and I, when we're hanging out together. We talk a lot about this topic, sort of the role of women in the kingdom. And so this will kind of poke at that a little bit. So I think it'll be an interesting show today.
It is ladies' night here at the Real Life, Real Talk. One of the things that I read Ruby Slippers a couple years ago when it first came out. Jonathan and I were both Zondervan authors in the same season, so I was reading a lot of what that publishing house was putting out. And I remember thinking, this sounds like the first feminist message that I wanted to swallow. Because even though I'm a strong leader, I do lots of speaking in churches, take a lot of leadership roles as a woman, you might automatically think, well, then she probably believes all that feminist stuff, but I don't. Some of that just turns my stomach, some of that messaging. And so, anyway, she was one of the first people that articulated what femininity means in a way that I wanted to embrace. So I'm excited about kind of just asking her to do that a little bit more for our listeners.
Yeah, it makes me curious. Again, we have talked about this a ton just on our own, just as we're friends together and our families get together. This is a topic that comes up a lot. And so for you to say this is an author that was kind of the first person who sort of put this together in a way that I could really grab onto, that says a lot to me. And I hope that'll say a lot to our listeners as they anticipate her being on.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely not one shoe that fits everybody, right? Like, that's part of her Ruby Slippers thing. You know, you can't some women want to be the princess. They like all that vernacular. They like that imagery. They want to be in the tower. They want – that's some of the captivating messages, of course, that the Eldridges put out several years ago with Wild at Heart and Captivating and all that. And then some women want to be, you know, more of that heroine role, more of the I want to be in my hands dirty front page – you know, I want to be in the battle in all ways. I want to be respected for what I bring to the table. And I don't really think either of those are right or wrong. It's just, you know, there's not one shoe fits us all. So how is it that we can all be made in the image of God and reflect all of us in the image of God and yet be so diverse in how we see that? So
Absolutely. Very
interesting conversation ahead today.
Right. And we got 2 minutes. I want you to tell this story about sort of your this thing that happened in Haiti, speaking of sort of the role of women and how. tell that story real quick. We got about a minute and a half.
Okay. Well, yeah. I was in Haiti this last summer, and I was going to be speaking to several different gatherings of pastors, and they must not have recognized the name Beth Guckenberger as a feminine name because they all readily agreed for me to come in and do some teaching about some of the things I had learned in Israel several years ago. I got there, and immediately these conversations ensued that I was not involved in that delayed the start of the program. And finally, someone came over and said, they're not okay with the fact that you're a woman. And I have faced that many times. I've had men leave congregations when I got up on stage. I've had pastors who refused to be more than 4 feet from my side in case the hook needs to come out, you know, in the middle of a sermon. I've seen all kinds of things. But finally, they relented. And when I was all done, the general consensus was, you know, not bad for a woman. That's pretty good.
That is not the message of our authors today, and certainly not the message that we necessarily embrace, not bad for a woman. So it's going to be a great conversation today. I'm really looking forward to it as Jonalyn and Bo join us about their book. So we hope you'll join us right after the break. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob. That's Beth. We hope you're having a fantastic Saturday morning this morning, and we'll be back right after this.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there, looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Abram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
Welcome back. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger on this beautiful Saturday morning. Good morning, Beth. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great, actually. I'm doing actually quite good. I'm excited about our show today. I'm excited about this topic. I feel like it just doesn't get chatted about that much. And since we're trying to have conversations to inspire the day, here's to hoping that we enter a conversation about femininity and spirituality in a way that people are talking about the rest of the day. So I'm doing good on this Saturday.
You are. And you said something right there as we came out of the break. It's not something that gets chatted about a lot, and I would disagree. I think it gets chatted about a ton, just not on a radio show or not in public. I think the conversation goes on all the time everywhere, but for whatever reason, this idea of femininity and the role of women and how they fit in, how women fit into the kingdom of God is a conversation that goes on a lot. It just happens behind closed doors.
Well, tell us a little bit about our guest today and how she joined this conversation.
Absolutely. Jonalyn Fincher is an author. She has a book called Ruby Slippers. And 8 years ago, she co-founded Soulation at soulation.org. Maybe we can talk a little bit about that as well. It's a nonprofit dedicated to helping others become more appropriately human. I love that. More appropriately human.
I think we got our first question.
I think we do, too. So, John, welcome to the show. So glad you could join us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
Excellent. That is my first question. What is a nonprofit dedicated to helping others become more appropriately human?
I'm glad you asked.
Yeah.
We take Jesus' words really seriously when he said, what is the value of a soul? How can you compare the soul to anything else? So we believe human souls are important, and we think they're the key to changing culture. Change a soul, you change the whole world.
Hmm.
And so the idea of being appropriately human or fully human, it really comes from Jesus, who came on earth, and he walked, and he lived, and he drank, and he ate, and he died, and he rose, and he said something was so good about being human, it was worth restoring.
That's awesome.
We try to help people see it's more than just, you know, there's a phrase that comes up a lot. People say, I can't help that. I'm only human. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to show people that your humanity isn't a place to blame things. It's actually a place to become more fully yourself.
Jonalyn, I wrote a book in 2008 with Zondervan in the same season when Ruby Slippers came out. And so I was reading a lot of what they were putting out in that time frame. And I remember reading Ruby Slippers, this woman who has a leadership role in a parachurch organization and who does a lot of public speaking on Sunday mornings in churches, and feeling like, you know, there's so many messages around women, women's role in the church, the understanding of what is feminine behavior. And this was one of the first books I read where I really felt relaxed when I was reading it, not on the defensive, not, you know, some of the ways in which I don't know, I've responded or reacted to other material. What was kind of your impetus for this subject matter in general, what you studied and then what you ended up writing about?
Well, first, I'm honored that you were reading it while you were publishing your book. That's special to me. You know, it's a kind of embarrassing impetus that pushed me to write this book, because originally I wanted to write to justify all those horribly difficult passages in Scripture where Paul seems to be putting women in a box. Mm-hmm. Saying they can't do this, they can't go there, and they can't dress like this. And so I kind of wanted to justify Paul. And in the process, I found that my views of women themselves were flawed. They were broken, and they were needing to be, I needed to push the refresh button on them, and I needed to go to God with my questions rather than just try to defend Paul to the world. So the book that I originally started writing almost switched 180 degrees from being a book telling women what to do to being a book freeing women to walk with God into wider places, maybe even more dangerous or untried places in their femininity.
And what kind of conclusions did you draw? And what kind of reaction did you find from the church to what you had been discovering and were writing and speaking about?
Well, first I found that Jesus believed in women more than I did. He was more of their champion than I was. He was less ashamed of us than I was. I mean, I run into women regularly who come to me and say, "You're the first woman I've ever seen speak at my church." I haven't been able to share some of the things I'm nervous about, either about my sexuality or dating or my attractions I have, because I don't want to share this with the guy up front. I don't know if how he would react, but because you're a woman, I trust you. And there's less shame, I think, there. So the first thing I found was that Jesus wasn't ashamed of women like I was, and he was willing to customize our souls and our bodies to our unique callings on earth in a way no one else had done for me. So I began to trust God with my womanhood. And then in the process of changing kind of my message, I found that neither of the two camps really wanted to claim me right away, because I was championing the idea that women are unique in their soul. There's differences in a woman's soul. And at the same time, I was saying because of those differences, women should be at men's side, not following men everywhere.
It's interesting. It makes me contemplate sort of the question that it's if you're saying that perhaps women reflect God's nature in a different way than men do.
That's exactly what I'm saying, yeah. That there's a unique one. When Eve was made, something different about God was splashed on earth.
And so tell me, like, when you think about the roles of a redeemed woman or a restored woman, like, what could we look like if we fully understood this reality that God customized our soul for our unique calling, or God believes in us more than we even do ourselves? What does a redeemed woman look like these days?
Well, I think to start with, a redeemed woman is comfortable in her own skin. She is able to look at the body God gave her and identify the things that she is unhappy with and bring those to God. Every one of us has been wounded in community. Someone, sometime, told us that something about our bodies was unacceptable. In Ruby Slippers, I talk about the first time a boy in junior high, and I still remember his name, first name and last name, he made fun of my hair. And I have really curly, really large hair, and this was before big, sexy hair products. So it wasn't quite as cool as it is becoming. And I remember he teased me in front of his neighbor, who was a very popular girl with blonde, perfectly straight hair. And I remember thinking that moment, my body is unacceptable to this guy, and I just wanted to hide. I wanted to slip into a hole and hide. And from that day until I was in college, I pulled my hair back tight. And it was very unflattering, and also it proved that I was uncomfortable with something that God had given me. And every one of us has places like that. And most of us have convinced ourselves and bought the enemy's lie that something about our bodies is unacceptable, unfeminine, and this is true of men too. Men have areas just like this. It's not a problem unique to women. It's a problem with humanity. So the first thing is a woman who is restored or becoming restored in her femininity will begin to own the places in her body that deep down make her uncomfortable, and she'll bring those not just to God but to the people she loves. I remember I was dating a guy in college, and every time we'd go out, I would have my hair pulled back. I usually pulled it back after I took a shower, so it would be wet and slick back. And every time we'd go on a date afterwards, we'd go walking by the beach or to a park, and he would be talking to me, and he'd slowly work his hands into my hair and pull all the bobby pins and the scrunchie and the rubber bands out. And he would fluff my hair out really big, and he'd say, "Why don't you wear your hair down? It's so beautiful." And at first, I didn't believe him. But he'd do it every time, every date, to the point where I actually started to believe my hair is acceptable. It is beautiful. And, I mean, that, for several other reasons, is why I married the guy.
So I would imagine, you know, you wrote the book as a woman for women, but I have to make a slight confession. I actually enjoy hanging out and eavesdropping on my wife's conversation with her friends more than I like hanging out with the guys sometimes, because I learn so much about how to be a better husband, or what it's like to sort of be in a woman's shoes. I would imagine the book then would be something that a guy like me could learn a lot about, sort of this idea of what a woman's role and femininity and sexuality can be in the kingdom.
Well, I would definitely agree with you. My husband was probably the biggest cheerleader of this book, for pulling the curtain back on some of the quote-unquote mystery of womanhood. The men who have read it have confessed that it has been the best book for understanding their wives. But I think at the same time, it makes them more aware that there are places in their own masculinity that need God. I think the way the sexes get divided into, like, the women talking and the men talking during mixed gender groups can sometimes rob each other of hearing or seeing the full image of God. And sometimes even the conversation derails a little bit. I mean, I have friends who say, "I don't want to go to that party because the women only talk with the women, and I want to talk to some of the guys too," and vice versa. So I'd say this book would probably... I tried to show how when God created men and women, he didn't make them for different planets. We don't come from Mars and Venus. We were made for Earth because God thought Earth needed both of the images of God present, working together. Yes,
absolutely. Before I let you go, there's one question. Just for our women listeners out there, what is a practical way for women to live a redeemed, full life in a culture where they tend to be forced to be viewed a particular way? Just one or two things. We got about a minute or two left.
Okay, that's a great question, Rob. I think the number one way a woman can live redeemed is to follow Jesus in being vulnerable. And vulnerability is one of the things that every fashion accessory is going for, with the stiletto heels or the gaudy shirts or the chiffon dresses. These are... the trappings of vulnerability, but the truly vulnerable person who's vulnerable in soul and knows who to be safely vulnerable with is someone who is reflecting the uniqueness of the God of Israel, who came to earth and was vulnerable. And there is nothing so attractive, so interesting in a friend or in a lover. I think that is the ultimate trait of what makes women unique and leading men in vulnerability.
Oh, that is great stuff. John Lane Fincher, who is the author of Ruby Slippers. John, thanks so much for being on the show, and just love the conversation.
I think next time we need to have you on with your husband, and let's have this conversation on in a wider, because one of the things that we talk about a lot in the show is how to have conversation, how to engage in the world, how to go outside of kind of your natural box and comfort zone. And one of the things is how to have conversations across the genders, and I'm thinking maybe let's figure out a good time for you guys to come back together, and we can talk about how to be appropriately human.
We love it.
Okay. We'll see you soon. Sounds good.
That would be great. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too.
Bye. All right. Blessings to you. You know, we only got about 30 seconds left, Beth, but it reminds me, I went out with some great friends the other night celebrating one of the wives' birthdays, and Christine and I got there late, which I know is not surprising to you or to us. But there were two seats left at the table. There was a seat at one end where the boys had gathered, and a seat at the other end where the girls had gathered. And I just, when I walked in, my heart kind of sank, because I just agree with John Lynn. There is something more vibrant about having a conversation more fully like that. So anyway, that's my two cents. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger. And we're going to come back right after break, continue this conversation about sort of the role of women in the kingdom. So join us right after this break.
Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care, assists senior citizens and adults to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Visiting Angels has over 400 franchised locations across the nation. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours a day. Rates are affordable, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. Visiting Angels has cared for hundreds of thousands of seniors nationwide. Franchises are available. Call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE. To find an office near you, visit www.visitingangels.com. For home care for your loved ones, call Visiting Angels now at 877-374-LIVE. That's Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care at 877-374-LIVE.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Abram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
If becoming or staying debt-free is important to you, you're not alone. 10 years ago, I was worried sick, overwhelmed with debt, and so tired of not having enough at the end of the month to make ends meet. I was working a full-time job, but getting deeper in debt every month, and I hated being away from my children. I finally said, that's enough, and I made a decision to do whatever it took to get free from the terrible debt that was causing me so much stress. I'm Gina Neef, and I want to invite you to find the same financial freedom that I found. Not only did I pay my way out of debt, I was also able to leave my corporate job and work from home and be completely available to my family. For years now, I've worked part-time hours, making more than a full-time job would ever pay. I remember the pain of being in over my head, and I'll never forget the joy of becoming debt-free. That's why I show others how to do the same. If you're ready to work from home and find financial freedom, then I'm eager to show you how. Go to findingfreedomnow.com. Discover how you can get free from debt. Go to findingfreedomnow.com.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach, but more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
Welcome back. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger. Good morning, Beth. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Happy Saturday.
What a great first segment, and I am so excited about this second segment as well. I mean, I love this topic, and that might be odd for a guy to say, you know, if there are guys out there listening saying, wow, why is he so excited about this topic? But it is, like I said in the first segment, this idea of sort of the role of women and how they lead and how they work and how they are in the kingdom of God is something I think we talk a lot about when the door's closed, but we don't talk about it out in the open. And as I mentioned to you, Beth, we talk about this a ton,
yeah,
right, when we're just hanging out. And I just wish there was more great public conversation about that. And the authors we have on today, including right now Bo Stern, these are authors who really are doing a great job talking about it in a way that is understandable and compelling, and so just excited. So Bo Stern is our guest this segment. She's written a book, Beautiful Battlefields, it's a compelling book. And so, Bo, welcome to the show. We're glad you're here.
Thank you. It's great to be with you today.
Well, that's great. Just the title itself invites the first question, Beautiful Battlefields. I'm assuming that comes out of a battlefield of your own.
It does indeed, yeah. Actually, it came out of reading the story of David and Goliath and finding out that as soon as David killed Goliath, Saul got jealous and put him right back on the battlefield again. And I was thinking, gosh, David probably could have used a vacation after that. But, you know, as humans, especially as American humans, we don't love suffering and we don't love battle, and I think we're conditioned to want to run away from it, but... It looks to me from the Word of God like fighting and battle makes us stronger and more beautiful than we could be without it. And so our battle came in the form of my husband's diagnosis with ALS, which is the more common name would be Lou Gehrig's disease. And we had been married for 27 years at the time, and he had never had any physical problems. And so it came as quite a gut punch, trying to figure out how to face that with a lot of faith and without letting it steamroll us and make us feel like God had turned his back or God was against us. And so in 2 years since, we've just had to answer some of the hard questions in the depths of our faith about who is God in this and what can he do in us and through us because of this that couldn't have happened another way.
One of the things I like about what you wrote about, and by the way, hello, Bo. Is this idea that sometimes the giants in our battle, just continue with the imagery of David and Goliath, but, you know, sometimes the giants seem bigger than they really are, but they're just a lot of smoke and mirrors, you know. And I'm wondering, how can we put our eyes in the heavenly realms or seat our minds above or any of that? How can we help put the battles we're experiencing in a God-sized perspective and not in a man-sized perspective?
That's a great question. And I think that I always get in trouble, always, when I hold my giant up to the size of myself. Like when I hold it up next to my own strength, I always feel like I am going down. And it is true that many, many of the things we face are bigger than us. David said, "You deliver me from my enemy who is too strong for me." But when we hold our enemies up next to God, I think in that same psalm it says, "My enemies cringe before him." And so when I make the match between my enemy and God, when the enemy comes knocking at my door, he knocks on the door of God's house, then I feel a lot better about it. Then I feel like, okay, we can win this thing. We're going to be okay because God fights for us. And even if it turns out to be that, I didn't even need to be afraid of that. I feel when I come out on the other side, I'm more in tune and in touch with his character than I was when I went in.
You know, again, this idea of battlefields and the title of your book, Beautiful Battlefields, it makes me think, is every battlefield, does it draw beauty? Is every battle at the end beautiful?
I think every battle can be beautiful if we are intentional about engaging in the process, about what God is doing. I always am telling women when I speak, battles are good for you, but don't pick stupid ones. You know, there are all kinds of things you can sin your way into battle, and if you do, then you need to obey your way out. But I think that even on the other side of that, the Romans 8:28 that we all love to quote and misquote so much, God works all things together for those who love him and are called according to his purpose. And I think we like to make it say God works everything out for those who love him, but really it's all, he works all things together. He brings these things that fall into our life, and he has this great synergy to kind of weave them together to make us look like his own dear son. So I do think there's beauty to be drawn in every battle, but we have to be intentional about finding it. We sometimes have to dig through the soil and find what's there. God, I think, can redeem anything, but Jesus clearly was not messing around when he said, "In this world you will have trouble."
Today in our show, Bob, we're talking a little bit about
some gender differences. And so when you first initially walked into this battlefield, what was some of the differences between the way you saw the battle and maybe your husband saw the battle? Or how do you more generally think that women and men battle differently?
Well, I don't know if this is true of every man and woman, but for my husband and I, he is a man of great faith. He was raised in Nigeria during the Civil War, and so he is a man of great faith, and I can see in his history how God set him up for the life that he's living now, even for the battle he's facing now. Mm-hmm. And I have always been one of those people who's like, well, sometimes it's good to just get a little panicky. It's, you know, fear is sort of a virtue with me. And so for us, I was sort of a look on the dark side kind of gal, and he was saying, no, let's believe and let's have faith for this. So we've come at it at different angles. I think part of our gender difference is, for me, I want a good list for approaching battle. I want to know how to do it. I want someone to say, not just some kind of theory, oh, you can find something good in this. I want you to tell me, 1, 2, 3, do these things and it will help, or try these things and it will help. And my husband is more of a face the day and trust that God's going to carry him through it. And again, maybe that's more us, but, mm-hmm. but as I talk to women, that's usually the very next question they ask me after I say, you can do this battle and you can do it well. They say, how? You tell me how.
One of the things that you write about is about the relationship between love and trust. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about why is it so difficult for sometimes for us to trust that God's in control, that he had a plan, his sovereignty, all of that?
Yeah, you know, in the Bible, I think we just see that many, many heroes of the faith struggled in the area of trust. And it was a tough one for me, especially starting out in this and thinking about how will I take care of my family. I suddenly was the only breadwinner, and my husband retired 15 years early, and this is a $200,000 a year illness, and I was just, I was in my office, literally on the floor, saying, Jesus, you got the wrong girl. I don't know how I'm going to do this. And I just kept hearing him say, every minute, every minute, every minute. And then the next sentence was, I've already been to every minute you'll ever face, and I've made provision there. And you won't see it right now, but you'll see it when you get there. Mm-hmm. And I think, it's been so much like the Israelites in manna. Every day it shows up. I don't know why he didn't give them a fridge full. I don't know why he didn't let him stockpile it, but I do know they got 365 chances to trust him and to build that trust before they had to fight some really big giants in order to take the promised land. And so that's kind of where I've had to be, is say, I'm going to let every day, what he does for me today is going to build my trust for tomorrow. But it's hard. It's legitimately hard.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking with Bo Stern, the author of Beautiful Battlefields. And, Bo, before we let you go, I know that you've got some other interviews to do today. And I did want to ask a little bit, not so much about the book, but you're involved in an organization called King's Kids Village. Could you tell us just a little bit about what that is and where some people might find some more information about it?
Yeah, KKV. I love that orphanage so much. I told you my husband was raised in Nigeria on the mission field, and his mom had been wanting to start an orphanage for, I think it was 54 years. She worked and prayed and hoped. And when she initially felt like she was going to start an orphanage, there weren't a lot of big needs for them in Nairobi. But then when the AIDS epidemic hit, of course, you know, it created so many children in need. And so her vision was to start an orphanage where it is all AIDS-affected children, and where they could move in with their siblings and be raised in a family environment with a mom and a dad and stay there until they had graduated from high school, not have to move around and not have to be separated from their siblings. And it is a brilliant, beautiful orphanage, and I just love it. There's few places in this world I'd rather be than at King's Kids Village Orphanage. And they have 42 children. And they're doing a great job with them.
Well, I'm glad we could give them a shout-out in the midst of talking about what is a really great personal book, but a book that any person could read and certainly glean great stuff from. So, Bo, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's some great stuff today. Some good stuff, some great books to read. Love it.
Yeah, I think there's more to chat about at this conference.
conversation continues in the next segment.
Absolutely. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall. That's Beth Guckenberger. Join us just after this break, and we'll keep on talking.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach. But more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
Welcome back. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger. And, man, Beth, a good show. Good stuff. Great communicators on today. You know, sometimes, and I hate to say this to an author, you know, someone that I'm talking to that's an author, but sometimes authors are not the greatest communicators in a different medium.
Yes, but they're fantastic writers, but they don't know how to articulate their thoughts and emotions.
Right, but these two folks, I mean, just really not just compelling authors, but really good communicators. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, I was writing down a lot of quotes that they said. You know, Jonathan Fisher, one of the things that she said right off the bat was that Jesus believed in women more than she did. And just that startling realization that we were not an afterthought, that we were not, you know, the lesser sex, even though we might be the physically weaker sex. Like some of those overarching messages she was just debunking right out of the chute, and I appreciated that.
Yeah, and she talked, she even had a little vision, a little image, not a vision, a little image there, about that a woman belongs at the man's side, not walking behind her.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a good visual. I mean, you know, we might think that, right, but in actuality, especially in a lot of American church culture, and gosh, even more in other cultures, that a woman's place is a step or two behind as compared to walking alongside.
And that really takes that understanding of not just the woman believing in her value and knowing what she has to offer, but really the man inviting her into that place. You know, for Todd and I, we co-lead this ministry. We fully recognize that we bring different gifts to the table, and we have different perspectives, even when we're engaged in the exact same conversation with a third party. We walk away from it with different kind of take-homes. And it's as important for me to realize that I have a voice as it is for him to know that I need to be heard.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been challenged lately. You and I have talked a lot about this recently, and I might stir it up on the air. Maybe I'll get a you're fired letter or something from 131 or something, the station when I'm done. But I've really been challenged lately about sort of my perspective on women. I've really struggled with this idea of sort of what I hear Paul saying sometimes, and is that a cultural message about what women are to be and do and all those kind of things. And I have a great, great friend, a great coworker who is much smarter sleeping than I ever will be awake.
Mm-hmm.
And he really challenged me in the readings right at the beginning in Genesis of the idea of what happened during and immediately after the fall. And it had, this is going to be boring probably to half our people, so I'm sorry if people. But the idea that, you know, Adam in early in Genesis names the animals as a way to show that he has dominion over them, right? That's one of the messages of Genesis 1 is when he's naming the animals, it shows that he's given them a name, and that means that he has dominion over them. I hope I'm doing this well. And if you notice in the story, and I'd never noticed before, it isn't until after the fall that Eve gets her name.
Hmm.
Up until then, she's known as woman.
Mm-hmm.
He's known as man. She's known as woman. They live in a partnership. After the fall, Adam gives Eve her name as a way to show that he, I guess, has dominion over her. And so as I was talking through this with him and as we've talked about it before, it really began to challenge me that it's the result of the fall. It's the result of sin, this idea that man should have dominion over a woman. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, a man and a woman were just that, man and woman, who stood alongside one another and co-labored together. And if my job as a believer, as a Christian, is to be redeeming things back to the kingdom, the way the kingdom was intended to be, then this idea that a man has dominion over a woman as compared to the idea that they are co-laborers perhaps is not the most correct, I'm stepping in it now, maybe not the most pure vision of what the kingdom is supposed to be. So I've really been challenged that, and that's why a show like today and the conversations like you and I have, and I have with this person who's much smarter than I will ever be, is really kind of stoking this fire into me about this is how it was intended to be from the beginning.
And what do you think about the role of vulnerability? You know, she talked about, Jonalyn Fisher talked about...
Oh, I thought that was great.
That, because I think it's actually both parties, right? The woman has to be vulnerable, and then the man has to be vulnerable. I mean, that's the very nature of the co-part of co-labor or co-whatever,
right.
To become one, is there has to be this certain aspect of vulnerability to that conversation.
I had two thoughts when she brought that up. Number one was obviously what we're talking about now, and Galatians speaks to, right? We're to submit to one another. So there's sort of this co-submission, co-vulnerability. But I also thought about this idea that, you know, she talked about particular fashion, you know, stilettos and chiffon, whatever that is, and all this other, and all this other stuff. But it's almost this false vulnerability. It's vulnerability that's intended to show off only the physical aspect of a woman. And what immediately came to mind is a fully redeemed woman, like we were talking on what she talks about in her book, Ruby Slippers, goes far beyond this idea of I'm only physically vulnerable. And it's a true vulnerability down to the heart of who God has created them to be. I thought it was a beautiful picture that she painted.
Me too, frankly. Me too. And I think moving
on. Hold on a second there. Were you speechless there for a second?
I mean, I was just thinking.
What?
Golly, if we could all have that conversation. If we could all have the conversation about how to be more vulnerable instead of how to be more right, or how to be more vulnerable instead of
being
more dominant, or how to be more
vulnerable. Now you're preaching, sister.
I mean, can we just, that's what I was like thinking. I either am speechless or I am full of more words than you want on the radio. That's really pretty much the choice.
You were deciding in that second or two, should I go with this,
oh,
or should we just move on? Because I got a lot of words to say.
I was going to transition over to what Stern talked to us about, and just the idea of the battle. And I think even her title, Beautiful Battlefield, I mean, I don't know very many men who would come up with that phrase. And the idea that, you know, God customized our soul for our calling. And so God wrote the history of this, of her husband, so that he would be fully prepared for the challenges he was going to have before, being a man of faith, having seen God come through for him in many circumstances. And then he would fully equip her as the other co-laborer in that storyline. And I love the imaginary, I guess I'd say the imagery, of this idea that the enemy or the battle is not knocking at my door, because the battle's bigger than me most of the time, but the battle of the enemy is knocking at God's door, and it's just dwarfed by the sovereignty and the power that he brings to the table.
One thing that we probably need to get ourselves out of this conversation, because we're going to end in just a second, and so I'm tempted to just keep firing away. But, you know, one person that came to mind as we were talking through with Jonalyn Fincher about her book Ruby Slippers, and Bo Stern about her book Beautiful Battlefields, Tricia Goyer we had on a while ago, didn't we? And I, for some reason, I was thinking also about our conversation with her.
Yeah, you know, one thing I appreciate about Tricia, she's right. She writes both fiction and nonfiction. I hope she just did a book with Kim Blanchard. I hope we'll be able to have her on sometime with him to talk about that, about how to lead your family like Jesus. But in her fiction books, one of the things I appreciate about her heroines are that they don't fall kind of into those similar trappings of, I'm in trouble and I need help and can you come rescue me? But they're articulate and smart and thoughtful, and
and vulnerable. She has several new books out. I actually, as an author, I have no idea how the heck she releases three or four.
Oh, I know. Even back then, she was like writing, it seemed like 10 books a year. It was crazy.
She's unbelievable. But, you know, I think that we need to do that. We need to not just have the conversation in mixed gender settings. We need to be having media, movies, and TV shows that are representing women in this way. We need to have books that are representing women these ways so that we get the idea this is the norm. This is the redeemed look of what the heart of a woman is.
Right. And I imagine, you know, lots of women out there listening, and perhaps men for that point, but lots of women have book clubs, you know, where they're looking for new reads, they're looking for things. And whether it's Trisha Goyer and you're looking for a fiction book, whether it's Ruby Slippers from Jonna Lynn or Beautiful Battlefields from Bo, these are some great books that if you're looking for a book in a book club or something that you do together with a group of people, they would, or just on your own, would be great books to add to the collection.
And both of us have daughters, and I just think, gosh, we got to get the conversation right, and then we got to have it out loud so that our daughters hear us talk about women in these ways.
Absolutely. Well, I don't want to let the hour go by without reminding people that in just a couple of weeks, due to popular demand, we're going to have a new time slot, 10 o'clock, new time slot at 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific, kind of relaunching the show Real Life with Beth and Rob, and a web presence, reallifewithbethandrob.com. I'm really excited about carrying on this exact. We're stymied by an hour.
Yeah,
right.
We are.
But in just a couple of weeks, we're going to get off the show. We're gonna pump up the blog, and we're going to start continuing the conversation that people can then join us in. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to be exciting. Not only East Coasters at 10 o'clock, but finally some West Coast people who don't listen to us at 5 in the morning, but they'll be on at 8 instead.
And in the meantime, until
for 7,
we're not as all up and running. If this conversation we're having right now, or today's show, is something you'd want to share, I just encourage you to put the link. You can get it on iTunes or on BethGuckenberger.com. Put the link to today's show on your social media, on your tweet, or you know, on your Facebook page, and get people talking around you about what does Christian femininity look like. I think it's fascinating, because whether you're a woman and you need to know what it is that God sees and views you, or whether you're a man and you need a front row seat to that conversation, we'll all benefit from understanding more about how God sees us and the roles in which He wants to work and move through us, in battlefields and otherwise.
Absolutely. And you know, the thing that I truly enjoy about the show is that next week, it's going to be a totally different thing. Totally different thing. I just like talking about stuff, right? So, you know, if I could pat us on the back or something, this isn't a one-theme show.
No.
Right? This is, the hope here is that it feels like we're sitting around the breakfast table together, and some interesting person has spent the night, and they're sitting at the breakfast table with us, and we're just having a conversation. So next week at the breakfast table, Manny Mill is going to join us. He's written a book called Radical Redemption, and what an unbelievable story he has.
Prison time, Cuban, Chuck Colson, I mean, you name it, the guy has the story. And so we're going to learn a little bit about the ways in which God does radically redeem us and chooses to be in our life.
I want to know how a guy goes from being chased by the FBI, facing 55 years in American prison, and all of a sudden he's going to be, and he doesn't go to prison, and he's out now doing prison ministry and written a book, and I mean, it's going to be a fascinating, fascinating story.
I want to come to that breakfast table next week.
There you go. Well, this is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob. That's Beth. We are so glad that you spent your Saturday morning, at least a little bit, with us. And we are looking forward to a great conversation. Same time next week, 8 o'clock Eastern. Join us then. Until then, have a great Saturday.